Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, do you ever find yourself like thinking thoughts in one circumstance or another, and you kind of have that paranoia where you hope that nobody can read your thoughts?
Wait, I mean, there's a thought bubble over my head at all times, right?
Well, no, but... No.
I was kind of under that assumption.
Well, yeah, if you read enough comics, I guess you do fall into that thing. But there are times where you kind of feel like there's a thought bubble, and to a certain extent... We all have tells. We all have there are various subtle and not so subtle cues regarding what we're thinking about. But I have at times found myself in situations where I'll think of something and I'll be like, ooh, I hope nobody could hear my thoughts, like an irrational.
No,
fear.
I actually know exactly what you're talking about. It's those intense moments, and you're thinking really, really, just very intensely about something, and it seems as though whatever is going on in your head is just booming out there.
Yeah.
And you look up, and I know it's that brief moment where you think, did they hear inside my head?
Yeah. Or like sometimes, like my brain anyway, I'll find myself in a situation of the end of my, I'll think, what is the worst possible thing I could think at this moment? And then I'll think it, and then I'll be like, brain, what are you doing? There could be people listening or watching in or reading you.
So your concern
well,
is that...
It's not a logical concern.
Although in the future, we're talking
yeah, we're
20 years perhaps even.
Yeah.
Those thoughts, those dark thoughts, might be revealed.
Yeah, exactly.
To everyone.
Yeah, because the
on a whim,
the thought police do not exist as a in its sci-fi sense yet. But police, law enforcement, employers, family members are of course very interested in what people are thinking, and we continue to roll out scientific and pseudoscientific ways to guess at what is going on inside someone else's mind.
Yeah, because, I mean, the big mystery for all of us is whether or not someone is telling the truth or telling a lie. And we want to scratch at that as much as possible. And genome sciences and policy lawyer Nita Farani says that neurosciences are already influencing the courtroom at least with terminology, she had brought up some examples at the World Science Festival on the mm-hmm. panel on neuroscience and law that you attended.
Yeah, Brains on Trial. That one was hosted by Alan Alda, and it was quite excellent.
And she says that people say things like, I didn't consciously choose to do the thing that I'm accused of.
My brain made me do it.
My brain made me do it, or I have a predisposition to addiction, and therefore when this occurred, it wasn't my brain. It was the brain of another person under different circumstances.
Yeah.
So we already see sort of the leaking of neuroscience into the courtroom, into law. So now it's just a matter of looking at both the past and the present and future to try to figure out how all of this is going to settle and what sort of technology is going to shape it.
Yeah, you mentioned the whole, like, my brain made me do it, or there's something in my brain that may be responsible for this, and I didn't have a say in it. It's interesting because that all gets into this whole the mind-body problem, the idea that a brain is a physical thing and a mind is a non-physical thing. Our consciousness is a creation of mind,
mm-hmm.
and our mind is a creation of brain,
mm-hmm.
and we find ourselves saying, "Hey, I'm a mind. Don't try the mind based on what the brain's doing. Persecute the brain, not the mind." Like it gets quickly as complex as any pondering we may have about the nature of consciousness and the nature of self.
Yeah, there's a lot of pointing of fingers.
Because
you could even say, well, wait, is the brain messing up my mind, my concept of reality?
Yeah.
So that's why all this becomes incredibly interesting when you start to look at fMRI technology, and some other technologies that we will discuss today. But in order to do that, we have to, of course, travel back to the past, and actually not even the past, because some of these things are already in use.
Yeah. Now, of course, we're talking about science. We're talking about the use of science in investigations, in interviews, in interrogations, and in criminal investigations and in trials. And we've always used science for these means. I mean, it's you can find examples where we would use phrenology,
mm-hmm.
the measuring of skulls. You know, totally bogus, but for a brief time, this seemed like a logical way to scientifically study what would make one person a criminal and another person not. Fingerprinting. We did a whole episode on this. If you want to really get into the history of fingerprinting and the validity of fingerprinting when it comes to criminal investigation, do check that episode out. Because as we discussed there, a lot of the fingerprinting science isn't as solid as we used to think it is,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of its power in the courtroom had to do with the fact that it was presented as powerful information with
this
all these
unique identifier. Yeah.
It was just the sell of it. Also, you've seen, truth serums have had their day, psychotherapy, polygraphs, which we'll discuss here momentarily. And now we're increasingly in the age of DNA evidence, and certainly DNA evidence has done a lot of good. It has been able to reverse decisions that were made based on faulty evidence in the past, as we've seen through
mm-hmm.
the Innocence Project. And then we're already in this age of neuroimaging in the courtroom, in criminal investigations, and we're only going to see more and more of it over the next 10 years.
I did want to point out that truth serum is actually used in some parts of the world, and truth serum is part of something called narcoanalysis, and this is administering psychoactive drugs for those interrogation purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are probably familiar with the term sodium pentothal.
Yes.
And this is quote-unquote, truth serum. However, it doesn't exactly extract truthful statements from people. In fact, there's this idea that it might make people talk, but people are still really responsive to suggestions. So they're still going to tell you what they think that you're trying to tease out of them, or they're still conscious that they're expected to deliver something to someone.
Yeah, I mean, in that regard, it's not much different from torture. The idea that if you inflict physical pain on somebody, they will tell you anything you want to hear to make the pain stop, and therefore it's a largely unreliable form of interrogation.
And that's the problem that we're going to discuss, too, with all these different technologies, is that at some point there is a margin of error,
mm-hmm.
and there's a problem here interpreting the results. And so polygraphs are a great example of this.
Yeah, let's get into polygraphs. Now, polygraphs, of course, the lie detection test. Most people are familiar with this from TV, where it has been just used to death in every television show imaginable. And even when it's used in a more realistic fashion, we still are bringing in all these preconceived notions about what it consists of and how reliable it may or may not be.
Mm-hmm.
So a polygraph is essentially a seismograph for the nervous system. It measures physiological responses such as heart rate, blood pressure, sweatiness, breathing. So when you're anxious, you're angry, you're in pain, you're emotionally aroused, these measures spike automatically. Generally, it's 4 to 6 sensors that are attached to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's breathing rate, pulse, blood pressure, perspiration, and sometimes they'll also record things like arm and leg movements.
And this is being used in the CIA as well as the NSA. So there are various agencies that actually use this. The problem with a polygraph is that you can actually beat it. And if you can train yourself to think in a certain manner or to do a couple of tricks, it's not a problem, actually, to pass one of these.
So as they're testing you with this polygraph device, they, of course, need to have a baseline reading. They need to ask you stuff like, hey, is your name Julie Douglas? And you say yes, and they see what that reading is.
Mm-hmm.
They say, are you wearing a striped shirt today? And you say yes.
Yes.
And then they say, are you the Queen of Mars? And you would say no.
Yes.
Thanks, or yes, so whichever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And this would let them know, okay, these are what her readings are when she is not lying to us. And then they would also ask you, you know, they would ask you some things too that you're expected to lie. Like, have you ever killed a bug? Well, I don't know. That's not a good one.
Well, have you ever stolen money?
Have you ever stolen money?
Yes. Have you ever lied to your parents? No.
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 Yes.
So they begin to, these universal questions that they know eventually you'll lie on.
Yeah.
Just to get, again, that baseline of, well, what does a lie look like?
What does a lie look like with this person? What does the truth look like with this person? And now let's ask them the stuff we want to know. Have you ever seen the inside of the How Stuff Works safe? You know, things like that.
Yes.
And see, that would be something that, they would test for. And they would compare that reading to these other baseline readings.
Well, so what's cool about that lying baseline is that is the one that you can game so that it scrambles everything else, right?
Yeah. Now, technically, it is possible for someone to simply not have a strong physical response to lying.
Mm-hmm.
People have beat lie detection tests before with this kind of effect, but it's more difficult. This is the kind of thing you would expect Hannibal Lecter to do, you know, more advanced control or lack of physical involvement with what's coming out of your mouth. But the baseline is a much easier thing to screw up. And that's where, say, the thumbtack method comes into place.
Okay.
So you would put a thumbtack in your shoe. And then when you're asked one of these baseline questions, you jab that sucker into your toe, which causes some distress, and then it messes up their baseline. It looks like you're getting this high reading for something that is a known truth or a known lie.
Okay, so the first time you lie, you you just maim yourself so that your physiological response is just so active that that seismograph goes nuts.
Yeah.
So the next time that you lie...
Yeah, it's not going to be near as strong.
Okay.
They're like, oh, well, that didn't mess them up at all. They'll just look at the readings. One of the problems with this method is that some polygraph testers will make you take your shoes off. So it's become that common of a method.
But who's to say you can't bite your tongue?
Exactly. So there are other means of causing yourself a little bit of physical discomfort to allow you to mess with those baselines. Now there are other bits of folklore that are out there. For instance, some people say that you can take certain drugs, you can rub antiperspirant on your fingertips, or you can use hypnosis, or just wiggling your toes or flexing your arms, coughing. But these tend not to work that well.
Oh, I see. So the antiperspirant is so that it reduced the galvanic response, that sweating response, right?
Yeah, but what I've been reading is that really doesn't help you any.
And that's just only one of the things that it's testing for anyway, so you still can't help it if your heart rate goes nuts. Another thing that I have read is that it's a mind over matter issue, and that if you can try to think really warm and cozy thoughts, calming thoughts while you're lying, is that you may still get a little bit of some action on that seismograph, but it may not be nearly as pronounced if you weren't trying to essentially meditate during this process.
Yes. So it's still used in a number of agencies. It's used by employers. But in most states, you don't actually see it in courts anymore because it doesn't pass scientific standards of admission in the courtroom. I was looking at a particular website, antipolygraph.org, mm-hmm. which is generally aimed at its use by employers and by these agencies. And they point out a number of interesting things about polygraph tests, about how so much of it isn't even about the looking at readings and comparing them, comparing these baseline results
right.
to the results of these questions. But they're bringing in all the other aspects of interrogation. So, for instance, they're looking for things like, oh, did the individual show up late? Did they seem hesitant? What does their voice sound like when they answer no to this question or answer yes to this one? So, and then they're also trying to get subtle admissions out of the subject as well during the course of the test. So, in a sense, it's still a straight up interrogation, like a straight up police, bright light in the eyes kind of a thing,
yeah.
except they have this pseudoscientific method on the table that's legitimizing it all.
Okay, so the readings that they're taking, that's a bit of a sham, right? The whole thing's a sham. The idea is that it's a psychological tool that they can use on their employees. So if that employee knows, oh, I might get tested this month, then maybe he or she is going to mind their P's and Q's a bit more.
Exactly.
Or that's
yeah.
the idea by the agency.
That's what detractors argue, and that's certainly what anti-polygraph .org argues. They have a lot of materials on the website, mm-hmm. including more detailed information about how it works and how to beat it. And when I say how to beat it, I'm again not just talking about the physical test, but the overall testing environment that is used by various agencies.
All right, interesting stuff to check out. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to talk about the role of fMRI in lie detection.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're back, and we've been talking about the thought police. We've been talking about methods of telling whether a person is lying or telling the truth. And when, just as an aside, one individual who famously passed the polygraph test, Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer. And of course, now we're in the age of MRIs and fMRIs. Mm-hmm. We're talking about magnetic resonance imaging and functional magnetic resonance imaging. Now, we've talked about fMRIs a lot on this show, because anytime we're talking about the brain and current brain research, we're interested in knowing what's going on inside the mind, what parts of the brain are being used to process various things. An fMRI measures brain activity by detecting the changes in blood oxidation and flow that occurs in response to neural activity. So when a brain area is more active, it consumes more oxygen, and to meet this increased demand, blood flow increases to the active area. And the difference between an MRI and an fMRI, MRI is a snapshot of the brain, fMRI is more of a moving picture of the brain. So you can see where things are flowing and how the activity is occurring.
Yeah, MRI is more revealing of anatomy, as yes, opposed to brain activity with fMRI. So it turns out, of course, fMRI is really, really helpful in trying to pinpoint the parts of the brain that are processing information. So if you're looking at a picture, you know that your visual cortex is going to light up. You know that if you're trying to make a judgment call about something that you're seeing or listening to, then you know that your prefrontal cortex is going to be very busy trying to weigh its options and its judgments.
Now, not everything, of course, is that stupid simple, if you will, because we've discussed before, a lot of times it's kind of a puzzle, figuring out you'll have multiple parts of the brain that are involved in a particular task, and then you have to sort of piece together what that means. It's not always a situation where it's like you can't look at an fMRI result and be like, oh, well, the part of his brain, the part of the brain associated with lying to your grandma about a cookie jar is lighting up, so we know what actually occurred.
But we do know that a lot of our memory has to do with spatial elements, dimensions. Mm-hmm. And so if someone committed a murder inside of a home and you were to put, say, some photos in front of this person,
right,
of this house, and you could see that their brain was going a little bit crazy in the hippocampus and showing that it recognized this room. It right. already had this blueprint inside of this person's brain, then you could begin to make the case that there are some unique identifiers of certain criminal situations that you could mark against an fMRI scan of the brain.
Right, and likewise, in the same way that you could show evidence pictures, you could also show pictures of suspects' faces. Mm-hmm. If you were, say, if someone thought that you might have been an accomplice to a crime, if someone thought you might have, say, driven the car that a bank robber used, and mm-hmm. then you were shown four different faces of four different suspected bank robbers, and then you could measure their response to that. Is there some sort of familiarity that's popping up here? And then also, apparently, there are three parts of the brain that work harder during a lie, and that's according to Steve Lakin of Cephos Corp, which is a company that's very involved in the development and the use of fMRI lie detection.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea here is that you put somebody in an fMRI and you give them basic yes and no questions based on whatever you're quizzing them about, and you can then put all that info through an algorithm and determine what is actually going on in their mind. At the World Science Festival, Alan Alda aired a little bit of a video from an upcoming PBS documentary
mm-hmm.
that he's done about neuroscience and law, in which he goes into this machine and into Steve Lincoln's machine, and they're trying to figure out whether he took a ring or a wristwatch out of a drawer mm-hmm. prior to the experiment.
Because he's a big klepto, Alan Alda.
well, he was asked to steal one or the other.
Yes.
And he says he was very tempted to steal them both just mm-hmm. to screw with their results, but he went with the ring, and they were able to determine, not looking in his pockets, but quizzing him, basically doing the whole the Hobbit and Gollum thing. You know, what's in your pockets is, I guess. And the machine was able to determine he definitely has the ring in his pocket because mm-hmm. he responded this way to questions about the ring and or pictures about the ring.
Okay, so there are a couple of problems though with fMRI.
Right.
And one is that the problem is our brains and our memory recall. And we've talked about this 1,000 times, that memory is fallible, that when you take a memory out, you can sometimes change it, or
right.
you have false memories of things.
Yeah, there are, I think we discussed 7 key ways that memories can be made false.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you're just going into a room, I mean, there have been case after case of people who either by their own fault, by their own formation of a faulty memory, or by slight coercion on the part of the police investigators, end up making a false ID in a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you end up seeing a face and you're like, that's the one. Or in that one case we were talking about where an assault occurred while the TV was playing,
mm-hmm.
and the victim ended up identifying the individual on the television as the individual in her apartment assaulting her.
Right, because she happened to be staring at that person while something traumatic was happening to her, and that was coded as the face who was perpetrating this act against her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the memory is just it's a very dicey thing. And, yes, as you had pointed out, eyewitnesses are notoriously bad at IDing the right person. So if you see an image and you're an fMRI and you see an image of a person and you think it looks like that could be a familiar person or someone you know, then it may not be. It may just be someone who resembles another person that
right.
you know.
So there's that whole issue of memory itself has to be taken into account.
Yeah, you can't tease out, is this a false memory mm-hmm. or a true memory?
Now there have been a lot of tests, though, with the fMRI lie detection, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 different ones with subjects given stimuli, and they're questioned about something that may be a truth or may be a falsehood. And supposedly the results are anywhere from 70% to 90% effective.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get into this weird area of what is it actually detecting? Is it really detecting a lie, or is it detecting emotional importance?
Mm-hmm.
Or some other kind of, mental process about the stimuli. For
mm-hmm.
instance, the ring. Alda ends up going with this ring, and I believe they were both his objects. So it's like a wristwatch and his wedding ring.
Mm-hmm.
So the wedding ring has a lot of value to him. It's like anybody's wedding ring. There are a lot of ideas wrapped up into that object. And so, to what extent are the fireworks in his head that the fMRI detects, to what extent are those more, tied into the meaning of the object than to whether he stole it?
So you've got memory, you have emotion to deal with, and the other part of fMRI and it being not so foolproof is that you can game it much like you would a polygraph.
Yes. In fact, on the panel we were talking about earlier, Nida Farahani actually was given this lie detection test and was told come up with ways to beat it, and she actually got pretty good at it pretty
mm-hmm.
fast. And she had a couple different ways that she recommends beating an fMRI lie detection test. So for instance, you're shown a picture of familiar faces to see if you know who the bank robber is, for instance.
Right.
Do you recognize this face? And she said that she could, instead of focusing on the face,
mm-hmm.
focus on a detail of the picture. You know, it's kind of like we've talked about before, if you stare at something long enough,
mm-hmm.
it starts looking weird.
It starts to look alien, right?
Yeah. So she would look at dots, you know, and she would just sort of zone out on those dots and say, no, I don't recognize this at all. She's being asked about the face,
mm-hmm.
but she's looking and thinking about just a collection of dots
mm-hmm.
that look totally new to her and different. And she's able to fool it that way. And then she recommends you could probably do the same thing by sort of blanking out your mind and trying to think about nothing, a la Ghostbusters, where they're told to that whatever their next thought is will be the form of the destroyer. And then Dan Aykroyd's character accidentally has this childhood memory of the Stay Puft Marshmallow
right.
Man. Or you could basically take the route of just thinking of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. If they're saying, well, you know, here's a question about this crime or where you were when this crime occurred, and you just fill your thought with Marshmallow Man, and you may pass.
Well, and she also says that you have to will yourself again to see this in a fresh new way.
Yes.
And to think to yourself, wow, that's amazing. I've never seen that before, that array of dots. fascinating, completely new to me. And yeah, she did that, and she was able to beat the machine.
And of course, one more thing to mention on fMRIs is that currently it would be exceedingly difficult to give somebody an fMRI against their will, because there's a certain amount, you have to be still, you have to cooperate, and therefore, in its current form, it's not going to be one of these situations where someone's brought in chains and said, all right, we're scanning that brain of yours.
However, if you were trying to prove your innocence,
then you could submit yourself. Yeah.
Or if you were going to try, if you were guilty and you were going to try to game the machine, you could certainly submit yourself.
Yeah. And you know, the experts on this panel, including Farahani and also Anthony D. Wagner, a psychologist and neuroscientist, I mean, they said, you know, in the next 10 years, we're just going to see more and more of this. We're going to see fMRIs used in or attempted to be used to clear people of crimes or to see about prosecution.
And there was a judge on that panel too, and they talked a lot about how judges are trying to get up to speed with neuroscience because they realize that this is seeping into the courtroom, and they need to become fluent in the technology and to understand and begin to actually sort of craft some of the laws around that actually.
Yeah. And also the importance, they also mentioned, of making sure juries are educated about it, because we mentioned the fingerprinting thing, but before, about how juries could be won over just by a fancy presentation where it's like, ooh, that has a chart. Oh, that has a picture of a fingerprint and all the swirls. It looks very impressive.
Right.
You're making an impressive looking case, so I'm going to buy it. Likewise, you don't want a jury that just because they're rolling out a bunch of neuroscience at you and just, you know, hitting you over the head with it, you're thinking, woo, they have the science on their side, so I guess they're right.
Well, and then you also have the instance of when DNA was introduced to courtrooms, and that was very difficult at first because people didn't have a shorthand way to discuss how to determine DNA.
Right.
It's now we take it for granted because we have a baseline understanding of it. But back then that was sort of crazy pants to be like, hey, so we're going to match these things up, these markers, in the following ways. And it was sort of scrambling people's brains.
Right. So that's the fMRI. That's one way that we have it, looking in at the brain and seeing what's happening. But then there's some other interesting areas as well that use this kind of mind scanning technology to see what we're thinking, to peek inside those little mental movies that we create, be they memories or fabricated fantasies or things that we would like to do, and actually taking them out of the brain and putting them on a TV screen for the judge and jury to look at.
And printing them out and distributing them to the jury, right?
Yeah. Now, this is something we've talked about this before. I think maybe we did it in our wrap up of Big Science for 2012, and it made a lot of press. And this was particularly a University of California Berkeley experiment where researchers fed a computer with 18 million 1 second YouTube clips that the participants in the study, the human participants, had never seen, and then they asked the computer to predict what brain activity each of those clips would evoke. Then they asked it to reconstruct the movie clips using the best matches it could find based on this enormous volume of YouTube data that it had.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You know what I like about this study is that it was the co-authors who actually volunteered to be scanned, because it took hours and hours of them looking at this one point, looking at movie clips while their brains were being scanned. And if I understand this correctly, the machine was then fed those YouTube clips so that it could create a separate database to then compare the images of the movie clips that the volunteers saw, right?
Yeah.
And so, this is where the images were reconstructed.
Yes. It's kind of like, basically, the idea is attempting to view these YouTube clips through the human mind.
Based on the scans,
and results were blurry but astonishing. For instance, if a human figure appeared in the original clip, then a human form would generally show you. It's not like you'd see the face or anything, but you would see a general representation of a human,
kind of shadowy looking.
Yeah,
and just very low resolution looking stuff.
Yeah. Now, what was really cool is that one of the clips showed elephants walking right to left. Since there weren't elephants in the YouTube clips that formed the computer's, visual information, it had no idea what to represent. It was just like a blurry, dark form. So it did not have it in its World Brain Dictionary. So you would have to establish a pretty rich World Brain Dictionary for this kind of technology for it to really be able to take those images out of the mind and put them on the screen.
But I think what is so fascinating about this, and it has such far-reaching implications, is that all it was just 18 million YouTube clips fed into this machine. If you were to, and presumably they're doing this, building up that database, then they could get a pretty rich World Brain Dictionary going.
Right.
If they were able to make this technology mobile.
Uh-huh.
See where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Then you could, unbeknownst to someone, and I'm talking future talk, beam a light at this person into their visual cortex, get a reflection back, and start to read off what this person is thinking of or dreaming of.
Well, one thought that comes to mind here is that would it mean that criminals would have to make sure that they perpetrated their acts with as many elements outside of the World Brain Dictionary as possible? Would we see like the rise of, and I think Grant Morrison used this in Doom Patrol a little bit, like Dada criminals, where they would have to use like absurdist costumes and tactics so that nothing that you saw would match up. Nothing that was, maybe the basic aspects of the crime would match up, because stealing money is stealing money, or murder is murder. But if enough of the elements were absurd and didn't match up with the World Brain Dictionary, then that would perhaps flaw the visions of it that we could get out of the human mind with this machine.
That's intriguing, because what you're saying is that you would train your brain to begin to... We know the brain can bifurcate itself anyway, right? Mm-hmm. It can sort of split its tasks. So, and we've seen this with ventriloquists. So if someone was committing a crime, they would begin to think of their gun as a marshmallow.
Yeah.
Refer to it, see it as a marshmallow, and therefore disassociate gun with the crime and associate Marshmallow with it. And that would be its sort of like quantum code, its key code, not quantum, but that would be its key code, right? And you would have to know the key code, but you, this person who is putting someone through the fMRI scanner or this machine that's wedded with the World Brain Dictionary wouldn't know that. You wouldn't have the key. Is it possible?
I don't know.
Surely.
Yeah. Now, another thing that you have to take into account here, and this is something that Anthony Wagner pointed out in the World Science Festival talk, is that another potential issue is how close imagination is to experience. Imagination, as we've discussed in previous episodes, is very close to the real experience as a mental event. There is some distinction in scans between memories of experience and pure imagination, but they're very similar. Very similar brain activity. So you might find yourself in a situation where you're using some of this technology we're talking about to scan the brain and see what your reactions are, or see what kind of mental images, mental movies are playing in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to ask yourself, is this a mental image? Is this person remembering a murder they committed? Are they thinking about a murder that they fantasized about committing? Are they thinking about a murder they saw on TV? Are they thinking about a murder that they read about in the newspaper and just via pure old fashioned human empathy couldn't help but imagine themselves in that murderer's shoes? You know?
Well, you know what's interesting about that is that there's that case of, I believe it was a police officer who was in a bunch of chat rooms concerning basically eating another human. Do you remember this?
The cannibal cop?
Yeah. He actually never killed anybody or ate them, as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this whole debate about, well, if this person actually started going to lunch, having these lunch dates with potential victims, and if he left this trail behind him, this memory trace, essentially, this, even if it was just his imagination or his fantasy, is he capable of doing it? Is he capable of stepping over that threshold? So in a way, it's the same sort of thing. I mean, how do you determine whether or not someone actually did the deed or is about to do the deed?
Yeah. When we get into the whole area of thought crime, is it, because like, for instance, take murder. Okay.
So
murder. So, like, for instance, there's a huge difference between me, say, hearing a story about a husband murdering his wife and mm-hmm. then thinking of that and being like, oh, my God, wouldn't that be horrible if I did that? That would be the worst. And then I imagine myself doing it in similar circumstances. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference between that and fantasizing about killing my wife, you know?
You know, this is an interesting conversation because I tried to explain to my mom once that growing up, I used to have these awful thoughts, and what I did not realize, when I was too young to realize that mm-hmm. I was just trying to embody in someone else's mind and imagine what something might be like,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of take that thought experiment to its nth degree to see what it felt like to be in that person's shoes. And it used to disturb me because I thought that I was a dark person, not realizing that's part of the creative process or the imagination.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, part and parcel why I am interested in writing. I'm a writer because I like to put myself into those other situations. So you bring up a really good point, you know, just occupying that frame of mind, mean that you're culpable.
Yeah. You have to worry about actors. You have to worry about writers. And then to what extent could you actually plan to murder somebody and carry out a murder by masking it with all of this art? Like, say, what if you just simply wrote the short story first and then committed the crime? Or you acted in the one act play? Or what if you made sure that the murder perfectly mirrored, some sort of a murder that occurs in Shakespeare? Because then it's kind of twofold, because you can say, oh, of course I have that murder in my mind because mm-hmm. I saw it on stage like 8 times.
Right.
Or, and also that would prevent them from, one of the things we've talked about here is, say, like showing them an image of a ring mm-hmm. and seeing if it lights up. Inevitably with any kind of homicide investigation or any kind of investigation, they're going to be, you want to keep the details out of the press because you want new information
right.
you can surprise, suspects with and be like, do you recognize this watch? Do you recognize this footprint? And certainly, do you recognize this murder weapon?
Mm-hmm.
But if the murder weapon is something iconic, you know, like I say, to whatever degree the crime matches up with something publicly known, then there's less stuff that you could shock them with. And anything you show them with, oh, of course I'm familiar with that murder weapon because that is the murder weapon that was used in this movie. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is interesting. If I were a defense attorney, I would probably take the tact of saying we are human beings. We have theory of mind. And this is what allows us to imagine ourselves in other situations. And therefore, my client is, you know, just putting her or himself into this situation.
Or what if you were to say, imagine yourself in my client's shoes? And then everyone does, and then you would just arrest them all because they've all committed thought crimes now.
All right. So, you know, on the panel about neuroscience and law, they did bring up the Fourth Amendment guarding mm-hmm. against unreasonable searches and seizures. And so, you know, they're extrapolating this to fMRI scans because, in a sense, you are invading someone's privacy.
Right.
So then, of course, it does bring up this whole raft of topics like what is privacy? To what extent do we have access to privacy anymore when you live within society?
Right. And this is especially a big topic right now. It's all over the, you know, the media. We've been worrying about NSA and our the contents of our emails and our phone calls, et cetera. But, Farahani brought up some interesting points. She said that there is nothing clear-cut that could protect us against this sort of thing if we were a legitimate suspect in a crime. She says that all a warrant is a right to the search.
Mm-hmm.
Would we need new language added to our warrants? Perhaps. But she says right now the Fourth Amendment protects us against unreasonable searches and seizures based on how physically invasive the search. It protects against physical body and space intrusions, but not intrusions into your secret. So she said, think of a diary. All right. The Fourth Amendment protects is the door that stands between the investigators and the diary,
mm-hmm.
not the contents of the diary itself. And an fMRI is minimally invasive in the physical sense, though it's, of course, potentially very penetrating in the larger sense.
So to make it parallel to the Fourth Amendment, then in order to access the door, then you would have to be served the search warrant
mm-hmm.
so that you would be able to at least, I suppose, prepare yourself.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we're entering a new age here. We have new issues that are coming up, and certainly we're going to have to change the language of warrants, the language of laws, and the language of rights.
Interesting territory.
Yep. All right. Well, on that thought, let's call over the robot and see if we have any listener mail. All right. So we recently did an episode on sensory deprivation, tanks, isolation chambers. So we did two episodes on them, actually. And we said, hey, we know that some of our listeners have entered the womb-to-tomb wet box as well. So let's find out what they had to say about it. Here's one from Taylor. Taylor writes in and says, hi, Robert and Julie. My mind was blown by the fact that Robert did not mention the movie Altered States during your podcast on sensory deprivation chamber. He is usually very eager to mention when your topics are featured in books or films, but he never mentioned it. It's a great movie starring William Hurt and has everything to do with what y'all are talking about. Robert, if you haven't seen it, I think you'd really dig it. It's about a scientist who gets carried away with his own research into SDCs and psilocybin. The movie gets very strange and far out with what happens to him. Just watch and you'll see. Indeed, I've been familiar with Altered States for a long time, but have never actually watched it. I thought I would find time when we were researching these, but the 2 hours did not present itself.
And, you know, we actually discussed it in our sort of like, hey, let's do this topic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
so,
we're like, oh, we should do this. There's Altered States. But,
yeah, William Hurt. And brain scans actually would corroborate this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. we'll pull out the brain scans later.
Yeah. They're mandatory here.
And here's another one on sensory deprivation chambers from Lisa. Lisa writes in and says, hi, Julie and Robert. I was so surprised to hear your podcast on sensory deprivation chambers literally a few days after I tried it for the first time myself. My first float was last Sunday, June 9th, and I'm going back for a repeat experience this coming Sunday. A new facility for this called Float House opened up in Vancouver a month ago, and I was both excited and a little scared to try it out. I was excited because I've been practicing meditation for a little while now, and I've heard that floating is a way to deepen the meditative experience. I was a little scared because the whole thing seems a little weird. With reports of hallucinatory experiences, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. The facility itself was very clean and spa-like. Each tank was in a private room with a shower. Towels, robes, slippers, shampoo and conditioners, etc. were all provided. While I did not experience any hallucinations or anything I would call transcendental, I did really enjoy the experience. It was extremely relaxing to lie in the warm water and meditate for 90 minutes. I was a bit worried that the time would be too long, but it was just right. I could have stayed in there longer, actually. It was a challenge not to fall to sleep, as I was so comfortable. When I got out, all of the muscular aches and pains in my shoulder and back had melted away. I can't wait to float again this coming Sunday. I hope you both enjoy your upcoming floats. Lisa, Vancouver.
All right. Very cool.
All right. Well, you know, we have more mail on this topic that we'll get to in future episodes, but we thank everybody for writing in about them and to continue to write in with your experience with any topic we were talking about. For instance, if you have something you would like to share about the science of lie detection, have you ever taken or administered a polygraph test? We'd love to hear about that. And certainly if you've undergone fMRI or any of the, anything of this nature, we'd love to hear about that as well. And what are your thoughts about the future of the thought police? Are you a little paranoid about all this? Do you feel okay with it? What do you think the world will be like in 10, 20, 30 years regarding our ability to peer inside the human mind and our legal authority to do so? You can find us various places to interact with us on these topics. Of course, the mothership is stufftoblowyourmind.com, but we're also on Tumblr. We are on Facebook, Stuff to Blow Your Mind, on both of those, and our Twitter handle is Blow the Mind.
You can also check out our YouTube channel, Stuff to Blow Your Mind, and make sure to drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.